it's Dr. Kent Holtorf with another episode of the Peptide Summit. Today we are graced to have Dr. Lisa Hunt, who is going to be talking about innovative treatment for autoimmune thyroid disorders. And I want to thank you, Lisa, for taking the time. I'm very excited to hear everything you have to say about this, although we talk very frequently. I think this will be a great talk because, as you know, and we'll get into, it's such a big problem and so many people don't even know they have the problem. So thanks for taking the time and being on the summit.
It's truly an honor just to be here, to be able to do this interview with you. And it's an honor to work as part of your team. So I'm grateful to be here.
Oh, great. Okay. I'll give you the $10 for all right. So yeah, just a little bit about Lisa. So we pretty much pursued her and stalked her for several years to come on board. She was, nationally recognized as an expert in many areas, specialized in anti-aging medicine, functional medicine, natural thyroid replacement, menopause, andropause, again, bioidentical hormone replacement, chronic fatigue syndrome, and some of the sick of the sick. She's become our go-to person for those patients that have really been everywhere, and that's what we specialize in. Fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, SEERS, mold, Lyme, immune system. We've kind of become an immune modulatory clinic, I kind of say. Neurotransmitters. She basically brought a lot of new therapies to our practice. And she, I think the wonderful thing about her is her passion for learning and how much she cares about the patient. She's relentless and it's kind of become a joke. She needs something for the patient. She will find the world expert and call him until she gets the answer. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And the empathy she has and just the amount of conferences that she goes to, and she'll develop a treatment program from all these things. It's really helped continue with our practice. You know, we pride ourselves in continually learning and bring the most up to date. She has taken that, put that on steroids and just bringing new therapies for the entire office. She loves teaching and sharing information. And it says here, her mission is to build on every level of your health, achieve the best quality of life. She also practices what she preaches. I tend to do as I say, not as I do in terms of diet and exercise, but so she's always on me too. It's really a pleasure to have her as part of our team and really an integral part because it's just, she's the quintessential doctor now and, really what a doctor should be instead of just doctors now, patient comes in, okay, here's a prescription. They don't care why or what, just kind of get you out of the office. She's going to get to the bottom of it and keep working and working and working until she gets it. She graduated from the Western University of Health Sciences, including her residency in the San Joaquin General Hospital. She's board certified in both family medicine and holistic and integrative medicine, and brings with over 20 years of experience. Actually, it's probably about 80 years of experience crammed into 20 years as a family physician. And she was medical director where we begged her. We did everything we could to get her on. So we're so happy to have her. She's a certified health coach, and she really brings that to the practice in that she works with the patients. She loves the patients and really works with them and understands them. And I don't know what you say, but she gives everyone her cell phone. She's talking to them on the weekends. She just goes over and above with everything. I can go on and on for hours about her. She's awesome. And just her passion for knowledge is just great. But with that, again, she's going to talk about innovative treatments for autoimmune thyroid disorders. And I think she was going to start with a PowerPoint, but what kind of got you into this to start with, instead of going the standard route?
Well, both of my parents had chronic illness. And so having gone through that as a child, I was able to witness different treatment modalities for them. So that kind of planted the seed for me. And then, you know, just doing family medicine and not having the tools to actually help my patients feel better. So I wanted to look for another way, because the resources that I had didn't feel like enough. So that's really how I started my journey.
Yeah. And it seems like you've always, from day one, just sought out more and more information. Mm-hmm. You're never satisfied. And I see it, and it's just amazing.
I'm grateful for you putting up with me and asking, being able to ask all the questions.
It's like, yeah, I see myself and I'm like, gosh, I'm a pain in the ass too, but you know, but it's really a pleasure to see you in action and hearing the feedback and the referrals that you get, because you get the sickest of the sick better. Today we'll be focusing on thyroid, mm-hmm. which is one of my passions, and which is a subset of all the treatments that we do.
Correct.
And people generally don't think of peptides when they think of thyroid, right? They think of basically just your thyroid. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And I guess we can go ahead and start your PowerPoint.
Okay.
And yeah, so share your screen there.
Perfect. So I wanted to start by going over the potential causes of autoimmune thyroid disorders. And as you can see on this slide, there's multiple causes. And as you know, Dr. Holdorf, you know, we've been spending a lot of time on mitochondrial dysfunction. You know, recently that seems to be the buzzword that has a lot, you know, to do with what we're doing these days. And you can also see on the slide, there's multiple other causes that can influence the immune system. And I love the way that you explain the immune system. So I would love for you to be able to, you know, explain how you do with the TH1, TH2 side of the immune system, if you wouldn't mind just for a minute, and how these, you know, these different causes affect the immune system, particularly in regards to the mitochondria. I love the way you do your little...
Yeah, people love it. And after the thousandth time, they kind of go, oh my God, here he goes. But in just through the years, we've kind of figured out, you know, I had chronic Lyme myself and did, mm-hmm. you know, 3.5 years, the highest dose IV antibiotics, and like something, and it didn't work, went into heart failure, and that, and, you know, doing the peptides really was so huge in bringing me back to functioning. But we really, in looking at the immune system, we found with so many illnesses, the commonality is a dysfunctional immune system, mm-hmm. low mitochondrial dysfunction, you know, hypothalamic pituitary, but everything's a vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. And what happens normally if you, and everything's an oversimplification when you talk about the immune system, but a good way of looking at it that fits with so many illnesses, if you look at the one side of the immune system, it's called TH1 and kind of Treg. So that gets stuff inside the cell and is also the part of the immune system that kind of puts the brakes on overstimulating the immune system. And then TH2 gets stuff outside the cell. And then TH17 is basically the inflammatory cells that are very much responsible for autoimmunity. Now, if you look online and look up autoimmunity, you'll see them break down. Well, these are TH1 autoimmune diseases, they are TH2. But throughout the years, like, well, that doesn't seem to make sense, because the same treatment works, modulate the immune system for the so-called TH1 and the TH2 autoimmune diseases. But so what they have found somewhat recently, it's, you know, a lot of people still don't even know this, but that the TH1 and the TH17 cells look very similar, but they're very different. The TH1 will actually suppress the TH17, which is the bad ones that are causing autoimmunity. So you'll have a lot of diseases called Th1 autoimmunity, but they're actually Th17. And I know there's some doctors that have protocols like raise your Th1, lower your Th1, but it's really wrong because the problem was not too much Th1. It was not enough Th1. It was too much Th17. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, everything's a vicious cycle. And then in terms of infections, if you look, you can really make the argument that every autoimmune condition has an underlying, something's driving it. And oftentimes it's an underlying chronic infection, mm-hmm. because that really pushes the body from low Th1 to that increased Th2, mm-hmm. and or stress. And we always find like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, Lyme, that people go, God, I went through this stressful event, a divorce, a death in the family, trauma, domestic violence, all of a sudden it set everything off, which I think caused a problem because so many doctors, this is a very complex illness, they can discount and say, oh, see, it happened after being stressed as a stressed out woman. But what stress does, we think of it lowering the immune system, but it doesn't lower it. It modulates it. It lowers that Th1 and Treg, but really raises that Th2, that Th17 inflammation, and really sets up the body for autoimmunity. Then you get the inflammation, which causes, you know, basically mitochondrial dysfunction, which makes now the hypothalamic pituitary access doesn't work. So all the hormones are low, but they look normal. You get gut dysbiosis. You get then from the gut brain access. Now you get, you know, brain fog, and everything is just a vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of unwinding that onion. And so it's never any one treatment. It's addressing all those numerous parts.
So Dr. Holduff really basically already touched on most of these that are on this slide. So I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next one. Also, you know, keeping in mind, heavy metals can be an issue as well, different medications, environmental causes as well. Just wanted to touch on the fact that, mold can be an issue, VOCs, BPA. Those are other things I just want, people to keep in mind. It can be environmental as well.
And I'll mention it's usually never one thing.
Right.
And even with Lyme, and I think many, many people have Lyme and never know it. It's now you had mold, you had stress, you had heavy metals, you had toxicity. And then all of a sudden it sets it off. Yeah.
And then I just wanted to touch on that. There's, two different types of autoimmune thyroid disorders. I mean, most people already know there's two primary ones, both Graves and Hashimoto's, kind of being on the opposite end of the spectrum. And basically the difference lies in which region of the thyroid gland that is targeted by which of the antibodies that are produced, and that those carry out opposite effects.
Yeah, and almost everyone with Graves has also Hashimoto's. Mm-hmm. So it just depends if the antibodies tend to hit the receptor that stimulate the thyroid, you get Graves. Mm-hmm. If they don't, you get Hashimoto's. So they kind of the same illness. And then they split off, but, mm-hmm. They'll usually have, the Graves people will also have Hashimoto's.
Yeah. And so, we're looking for different lab values, that might be more indicative of one than the other, particularly the thyroid stimulating immunoglobulin antibodies. And those can be present in 90% of people with Graves disease. And then typically with Graves disease, and I'm really excited to share a couple case studies at the end of the PowerPoint that show how some of the innovative therapies we're going to be talking about, particularly peptides, really help to demonstrate that they do work with the different lab values. But primarily with Graves disease, we're going to see an increase in the thyroid hormones. Particularly the free T3 and free T4. And in traditional medicine, the treatment is to decrease your thyroid hormones. Some examples, like I noted on the slide, were things like a thyroidectomy or radioactive iodine. And the patients that I'll be presenting at the end, they really wanted to preserve their thyroid. They didn't want to have to do these types of treatments. And so we'll go over some of the therapies that we utilized.
And I'll just mention, and you know, the big thing about endocrinology at Graves, let's take out your thyroid. And you know, a big part of our practice is seeing people who've had their thyroid taken out, let's say for cancer that never even had high thyroid. And then what they do is they'll give Synthroid and titrate their TSH to be normal, and they call them euthyroid. But why then is the average weight gain 14 pounds? The patients have fatigue, they, you know, basically all the symptoms of hypothyroidism, but the doctors say, well, it's just in your head. Well, wait a minute, I didn't have that before. Mm-hmm. And so what they found, you know, is that without a thyroid, the more you need more T3. And actually the body, we're trying to develop an assay in this for 15 years, we're getting closer, but the body will secrete a TSH that is not active. And so it's more and more, the studies are showing that the TSH that everyone thinks, well, that's all you need, is very flawed. And, you know, we really started out, and I started out, you know, with as a thyroid clinic, I tell physicians, learn thyroid. It's one tool, but it's a huge tool. You fix everyone's thyroid, you're going to get a heck of a lot of people better that have been to every doctor. And oftentimes it's a seemingly simple treatment, but it can be so powerful when you do it correctly. And in general, the sicker the patient, the more they need T3. Mm-hmm. But doctors see them, and across especially, oh, the patient's sick, don't give them T3. But for a lot of reasons, which, you know, it's a 4-hour talk on to explain why this is, but when you're sick, the T3, there's poor conversion T4 to T3, but that's not even the biggest problem. You hear doctors talk about that. It's that T3, there's not enough energy due to the mitochondrial dysfunction to get into the cell, except in the pituitary. So the TSH looks fine, but the body's starving for thyroid. So we have other tests that we have that we can do to show the patient in black and white, they're low thyroid, but their TSH is normal. And their doctor says, no, it's not your thyroid, but you're, you know, you're depressed, you're can't get out of bed. But we can show you your low metabolism, which is the gold standard, and also the speed of relaxation phase, which we do via computer, which shows your low thyroid, and you know, everyone telling you you're just lazy and all this stuff. You have chronic fatigue syndrome, and they put all their money in one test that is shown to be inaccurate. But okay. Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, just going over the definition, which you've already kind of touched on in terms of Hashimoto's, there's other antibodies, which, as you already said, can be present in Graves as well, but looking for the thyroglobulin antibodies and the TPO antibodies, and there's a pretty high percentage of people with this autoimmune issue that show positives with those. And the traditional treatment for Hashimoto's is just replacing with, like Dr. Holdorf was just speaking about, you know, just Synthroid or the typical T4 replacement therapy.
I want to mention one other study. Mm-hmm. Is out of the Lancet. So basically number, you know, top 5 international journal, they did thyroid biopsies in people who were just fatigued. They found the majority had thyroid inflammation. So they had Hashimoto's, but they didn't have the antibodies that came up on the blood test. And they were thyroid deficient. When you look at a test such as a TRH stimulation test, which is more sensitive, but in all its wisdom, the exercise said, we don't need that anymore because we have the highly sensitive TSH, but they're low thyroid. And these are just fatigued. They weren't even chronic fatigue syndrome. And they found that the patients responded to thyroid replacement regardless of their thyroid serum levels. So serum levels of thyroid hormone in the blood doesn't, and TSH doesn't tell you what's going on inside the cells.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I just wanted to put a slide in that, you know, just went over the different symptoms for hypothyroid and hyperthyroid. Again, the tendency for hypothyroidism is more on the Hashimoto's side versus the Graves is more the high thyroid side. I'm sure most of you are familiar with these symptoms, but they're all laid out on the slide already.
And can you mention a little bit about either children or women with fertility and the how thyroid's so important for, you know, pregnancy?
Right. So you won't be able to ovulate appropriately without having optimal thyroid levels. So that's one thing when people come into our office and they're, you know, preparing for pregnancy, that we really want to optimize the thyroid. And if there's an autoimmune component, we definitely want to treat that as well to improve infertility or the possibility of infertility. So that's definitely something that we, you know, focus on.
And through the years, we've just learned that so many people, they go to all these, you know, fertility doctors, they can't get pregnant, and they come in and we find they're very low thyroid, and mm-hmm. someone just giving thyroid T3, and oftentimes heparin, which is a whole nother talk, all of a sudden they get pregnant. But, mm-hmm. and we will be starting our module of basically for fertility, pre-pregnancy optimization. And they also found that so many things in utero, like the intelligence of the baby, correlates with the level of thyroid in the mother in utero. Well, why wouldn't you want to have, you know, in the top 25% or the top 10%, but all these doctors, OBs, fertility doctors, they go, oh, you're at the lowest 10%, lowest 20%. Why would you want to be there? And it's going to affect your child for maybe forever, or certainly for a very long time. They have developmental delay, or you might not get pregnant. And just doing that one simple, safe thing can make such a profound effect in people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oops, sorry. And then I just wanted to include a slide, you know, demonstrating that, you know, at Holdorf Medical Group, we really do strive to get to the root cause. There's not a one size fits all. People are always asking, just as a general concept, you know, what can I do? And it's always like, I'm always telling them that, you know, you're an individual and your treatment's going to be different than the next person. So I really like this slide because it kind of summarized the differences between conventional medicine, one size fits all, and what our goal is here to individualize the treatment for each individual, and particularly in regards to autoimmune illness, because there's so many different causes. So we really do have to get to the root cause to be able to determine how to best treat the patient. I'm really excited to present these two cases that we had. I wanted to embark on talking about the innovative treatments that we utilize here at Holdorf Medical Group, in particularly peptide therapy. Do you want me to go ahead and just go through the definitions?
I think it's great. And because a lot of the talks, we kind of glance over some of the basics. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great for people to hear, just go, like, what the heck is a peptide? What was that? Yeah. I mean, they're just getting inundated with so much info. I think it's great.
Yeah, so peptides are basically sequences of amino acids. And the elegance of them is that the sequence that they're in gives a different signal to the cell. And so they're amazing. I feel so honored to be able to work with them. Because they have minimal side effects, if any, and they have multiple properties. And so we primarily use them here for immune modulation. And so they've worked amazingly for my patients with autoimmune issues. And they are very cutting edge. They are a newer therapy that I feel really blessed to be able to use. They can be utilized orally. They can also be used nasally. They can also be used subcutaneously. as well. So there's several different ways that you can utilize them. And the beauty of them is they're not hormones, so they don't have to bind to a particular receptor, which makes them unique. I didn't know if you wanted to add anything to that, but I just find them fascinating.
Yeah, I think when you compare, for instance, move over hormones, peptides are here, but it's another layer of control of the body that, well, we didn't know about. When I say that, I'd say the U.S., you look at some of his Eastern Bloc, and the research is there. But a lot of the research we also go to is old and very well done studies. But so the problem is there's not a lot of new research being done unless it's a new drug, because these are off patent. So who's going to spend millions of dollars to do a study when they don't have a patent? It's just, here you go, I did a study for everyone else, but the safety, when you look at a lot of these, and they're pleiotropic, so they'll set off a chain reaction. So hormones go into the cell, go into the nucleus, change protein synthesis, slow on, slow off. Peptides tend to work on cell surface and cause signaling, where it's a cascade of effects that causes multiple changes, which actually ends up being much safer than, especially with medications, they do one thing. Mm-hmm. And when you do one thing, it's messing up so many things. For instance, like a lot of peptides take GHK, it will turn off and turn on like 4,000 genes. And we're doing a lot more genetics. And the thing with genetics is that, well, here's your genes, but that's really 20% of what's going on. What matters is, what are you doing to turn off or turn on those genes? And that's where things, diet, exercise, we had a great talk with the guy from Megaspore, John Kershaw, and really he's a microbiologist, and how, really we know the gut microbiome affects so much epigenetically, but he's done so much research on this and how the basically the good bacteria change your genes. And let's say you have an APOE4, oh my gosh, you're getting Alzheimer's. Well, really, you can change 80% of that chance by doing other things. And peptides are huge in that. So mm-hmm. are probiotics and lifestyle and diet and all those things. So your genes aren't your destiny. Mm-hmm. It's what you do from here out, which is why we love peptides.
Right. So I'm really excited to present these case studies so people can actually, see concrete evidence that they do work. So with your permission, I'm just going to go ahead and read through the case study and share what we did. And then, the graph is there that shows the evidence that, the peptides do indeed work. The first case was a 39-year-old Caucasian female, and she presented with a chief complaint of an 11-year history of fatigue, low energy, exhaustion, 10 out of 10. Migraines, generalized muscle and joint pain, stiffness, brain fog, poor focus, unrefreshing sleep. She had an elevated heart rate, like in the 120s at rest, and flu-like symptoms. And she noted that her symptoms started after she was training for a marathon and after her child was 1 year of age. She had seen, I can't even tell you how many doctors before she came in here. And she walked in here with a pulse of 120, and nobody had even told her that she was tachycardic. She had been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, depression, anxiety. She was on antidepressants. And she had noted that the medications that she was given had caused a 20-pound weight gain. So then after the first visit, we ran labs on her. And as you could see, her natural killer cell function was 2. And, you know, we commonly see that with patients that end up, she didn't know that she had any Lyme bands, but we did test her for Lyme. And as you can see, her Th1 side or natural killer cell function was quite low. And so, you know, and her Western blot did demonstrate the 2 bands. So I'm just going to go to the next slide. So these are the therapies.
Can I just mention a little something?
Yeah, please.
So yeah, when you see someone like this, one, such a high resting pulse that shows that that immune system, the sympathetic, parasympathetic system, she's in fight or flight. It's dysfunctional, which goes along with the, you know, basically neurological immune system is basically out of balance. And we use the natural killer cell function as a marker for that Th1. And so it really should be above 30. The lab says, you know, basically 7, but I've talked to the medical director. It needs to be a send out through Quest, National Jewish. I said, this is ridiculous. It's so low. And you look at the literature, it should be 30. He says, well, they have to do their own reference ranges. And they take whatever, 25 people who probably half of them are really sick. And it widens that reference range. So really 2, she has, the Th1 is so low. And I think the, you know, fibromyalgia is, you know, the most ridiculous diagnosis, 11 out of 18 tender points. Those tender points are nothing special. There's nothing that those are like pressed there. Oh, that's a, you know, basically, and you look at like rheumatology videos, how to do that exam. They take like 20 minutes. You want the fibromyalgia? It's, hey, do you have pain all over? Are you tired? Can't sleep? And do you have post-exertional fatigue? There you go, you know. And we use a lot of times the test, like low natural killer cell function. If you look at studies on chronic fatigue syndrome, 75%, 70-75% will have low natural killer cell function. So these natural killer cells, which monitor the body for intracellular infections and cancer, don't function. And so about 70 to 75% will be low. If you do like LabCorp, which is bad, they have natural killer cell number, about 25% are low. So this is more sensitive. And when we see that low, we really think of a chronic infection in this, mm-hmm. in this patient. Mm-hmm. And I think fibromyalgia did such a disservice, also chronic fatigue syndrome. So chronic fatigue syndrome goes by symptoms. Fibromyalgia goes by exam. And really just their syndromes. It's unfortunately allowed the doctors to do nothing and say, well, you got fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, nothing we can do. Here's an antidepressant. Well, what caused it? You got to find the cause.
Right.
And, but it's given them the license to do nothing. So I think again, it's an antidepressant and that's not the problem. You know, they'll be depressed. They don't make serotonin. They have all these issues, but you know, they don't have a Prozac deficiency.
So we started her, you know, on several of the peptides staggered, mostly for immune modulation. So we utilized BPC-157, thymosin alpha, and I really loved using the epithalin with her as well. I really think that helped to calm down her immune system. And then we also used low-dose naltrexone, which is a great immune modulator as well.
Can you talk about each of those, the peptides, LDN, you know, kind of your thinking behind it, what you have found, like why you chose these and what they do?
Yeah, so we started with BPC-157, which is an amazing immune modulator. It's a great antimicrobial as well. And so we used it for those properties. The thymosin alpha really increases the natural killer cell function. I mean, it's a great antiviral as well. Epithalin is probably one of the best anti-aging peptides out there. We didn't use it for for that in this particular case, but it's a great immune modulator as well. And as well as low dose naltrexone. And at this point, she has no longer, we used the sub-Q injection peptides for several months, but it's almost 2 years out now, and she no longer needs the sub-Q injections. We've maintained her on the low-dose naltrexone as an immune modulator. And I also wanted to touch on the LL37. LL37 is an amazing antimicrobial peptide that's innate to the human body. It's our own natural antimicrobial. And in her situation with the potential for Lyme with the two bands, I think this was very valuable as an antimicrobial to help treat this particular patient.
Yeah, and with LL37, it's, for instance, shown to kill Lyme cyst better than conidazole. Mm-hmm. And it has very broad range, which is nice. I was at a conference this last weekend, and one of the doctors was raving, he was a urologist, talking about for prostatitis. You know, these people have chronic prostatitis and they're put on antibiotics for months and months, it comes back. They have to use, you know, Levaquin and these fluoroquinolones, which are having very bad side effects. And he's going, you can't believe it. But, and the nice thing with the peptides is they very synergistic to each other. And you look at BPC and TB4, and I almost a little embarrassed to give talks, like how many things that they do, you almost sound like a snake oil salesman because they heal so many things. And they both tend to have the same effects, but very different mechanism, which makes them very synergistic.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, you know, this show the handout that we show, you know, give to patients with all the references behind BPC 157. I mean, half the page is references of all the clinical studies that you were able to pull on.
And you look and people say, oh, that's not evidence-based. Well, here's 400 studies, okay, you know. And most drugs that are approved, they have like three studies.
So, and on this handout, just, you know, in case anybody wanted it, it goes over all the clinical effects of BPC 157. I know I just barely touched on things. And then there's also one here for thymosin alpha. You know, I wanted to really emphasize that it increases the natural killer cell function. It's one of my favorite reasons to use it. And also is effective, you know, as noted here for issues in regards to Lyme. And then the thymosin beta 4, again, here are a lot of the references that Dr. Holdorf pulled and really, you know, discusses all of its effects. Not all, but you know, the main ones that, so that you have that handout as well. And then here's the handout on LL37, and Dr. Holdorf has 36 references. And I love to give these out to patients just so they know how science-based Dr. Holdorf's office is, so that they can go and look at, you know, all the references. I think that's really important.
Yeah, and you look at things like, you know, thymosin alpha 1 is approved in 30 countries. And in the U.S., it's an orphan drug. It's approved for melanoma. Also, it's, you know, approved in other countries for everything from HIV, hepatitis, cancer. And then, like, thymosin beta 4 is going through a number of trials, including things like corneal ulcers and like, for instance, we use it. It's just so many things. We use BPC and TB4 drops for dry eye. It's just incredible the amount of things that it does. And in the studies, for instance, like with TB4 and BPC, they can't find a toxic level. And on the one study where they had adults just given higher and higher doses of intravenous TB4, they can't find a toxic dose at even 1,000 times a dose. What medication or anything can you give at that dose? Try that with water, you're gonna die, you know. But so they're very safe, which is obviously amazing for the effects that they have. They have effects at very, very low levels, like one that micrograms or sometimes nanograms, which is, you know, one with 12 zeros, and they can have effects where basically medications need milligrams, much, much higher. But their range, like your is very wide. So you have a huge safety window there.
Mm-hmm. And then if we have time, I'd love to go over this other
case
study as well. So she was a 33-year-old white.
Just about that last one. So what kind of finally happened?
So all of her markers, everything normalized. And she, again, she's off of all the peptides. She's basically maintained with the low-dose naltrexone at this point. Did not have to have her thyroid taken out. Didn't have to have any kind of radiation therapy.
How is she feeling?
She's feeling great, and she's so grateful that she didn't have to destroy her thyroid gland.
Wow, and it's interesting that she really had a lot of things going on. You know, you look at her, you know, immune system, she had mitochondrial dysfunction, and where all of a sudden you fix a particular thing with PEP, because they do fix a lot of things, that you can get these complex patients better without doing 10,000 things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. I know you have so many, but I've heard so many patients you've gotten so much better, and in terms of everyone so grateful. But this is a very interesting case where you didn't have to really do many treatments.
Mm-hmm. And that's how powerful the peptides are. But it's also, you know, emphasizing in both of these cases that we cannot forget the potential for a chronic underlying infection to be the etiology of what's going on with these patients, because a lot of physicians don't necessarily look for that or believe that a chronic underlying infection could be causing that. And once we treat that and strengthen the immune system so that the infections become essentially background noise, the patient gets better.
And just on that, and that's what I found out the hard way. And, you know, that's usually where you learn a lot and your lessons are expensive. But you know, with someone who has such a low natural killer cell function, you can give them antibiotics so the cows come home, mm-hmm. but antibiotics won't kill anything enough. They won't get it down to zero. Your body has to take over. So yeah, you can use them selectively to knock down the infection because they also suppress the natural killer cell function, but you need that natural killer cell function high to take over.
Right.
So we have so many infections that if you drop your immune system, they all come out.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, you know, I don't know if you ever get rid of Lyme. I think of it kind of like chicken pox. You think, well, I don't have the chicken pox anymore. Well, you do. If your immune system drops, it comes back out as shingles. So the key is to keep your immune system high, and mm-hmm. then it suppresses everything. And that's what the body does. But if you drop that down, it's, and so many things come out that you have, you know, hundreds of infections. So,
mm-hmm. So I just really wanted to emphasize that point. But this last case was a 33-year-old Caucasian female. She presented with a recent diagnosis of Graves. So she did come in knowing that she had Graves and hyperthyroidism. And the only option being given to her was radiation ablation of her thyroid gland. And she really wanted to save her thyroid gland. She had already tried the tapazole and she developed a rash that she had to stop it. And she came to our office on all these medications to offset the reaction she had to tapazole, the Benadryl, the prednisone, the Zyrtec. And so after, you know, her first visit, we did multiple labs. I know I'm only presenting just a few of the labs. But again, on this particular case, she ended up having band 18 and band 41. And, you know, she knew she had Graves' disease and her thyroid gland was enlarged. And we did a similar type of therapy with her with similar peptides, and we were able to save her thyroid gland. She didn't have to undergo radiation. And she, in this particular case, she had no other option. It was either radiation and kill her thyroid, because she wasn't tolerating the medication that are the typical treatment for Graves. And so again, we used the BPC, the thymosin alpha, again, synergistically starting one at a time, the thymosin beta and the LL37 and the epithalin. And she used those, you know, for a few months. Again, at this point, she's off of them. She's several years out. Still has her thyroid gland and is really grateful for that. I mean, why should we remove an organ if we don't have to, or kill it?
Yeah, that's what they want to do. And, you know, yes, endocrinologists, especially Hashimoto's, you know, they don't think there's anything you can do about the autoimmunity. So what's, you know, their answer, like with Graves, we'll take it out or nuke it, you know? But there certainly is, because there's an underlying cause of that autoimmunity.
Yeah. So, it was really exciting to be able to have these alternative therapies when, if I were in traditional medicine, I wouldn't have had anything else to offer her. I mean, she was reacting to the medications. So.
And these are interesting that they responded and they didn't need a lot of other, I mean, there's so many. Yeah, you know, peptides are a very good tool. But you know, there are many things going on with these patients, but it showed that, okay, a lot of very good innovative doctors would have picked up on the Lyme and then treated her with months and months or years of antibiotics, right? Mm-hmm. And that would have its own problems. And in the end, and it may have worked or helped, but damn, you cut through that and basically got it from point A to point B much quicker. Whereas you couldn't fault a doctor for saying, hey, let's work at the underlying problem, which is the infection and going after that, but probably, you know, taking forever and whether it's successful or not, and whether, you know, her immune system is, as it's obviously dysfunctional if she has autoimmune disease, but you went right to the more of an underlying, well, kind of the resultant of the infection, but it's her chicken or the egg. You get the infection because you have low immunity, but you have low immunity because of the infection. So,
Yeah. So that was all the slides I had to share.
That is just great. And it gives, I think, so many people hope. And as you know, so many people are low thyroid that are, you know, just told they're lazy and you know, suck it up, eat better, exercise. And we have, you know, so many people cry on the first visit when we show them all the abnormalities. And we like to do a lot of tests up front so we can paint a picture, and really one of our jobs is to prove to the patient what's going on, you know, so they can see. Because when we tell them too, your doctor is going to say, this is, you know, no, we did a CBC, a cholesterol, and you're fine, you know. But it's really, you know, information is key, because once you have that information and experience, you can get patients better. Is there any guarantees? No. And there are so many treatments. And that's one thing I love about Lisa, is always new treatments coming out with, and does one thing work? We try to use the thing that's going to most likely work, and peptides are a good choice because the downside is very little. You're not going to cause a huge problem. Where you commit someone to IV antibiotics, put a PICC line in, you know, that's where some articles have come out and really criticized, you know, Lyme doctors, and that's where some major problems can happen. So it's the nice thing is the safety, and that the benefit risk ratio is so good.
No, I'm so grateful that you've given us this resource to be able to use for the patients.
Yeah, and I know you get, you know, we tend to send you some of the, you know, the sick of the sick, everything from that to just what we think of, oh, easy patient, no, she's just been fatigued or has some, you know, menstrual problems. And, but to them, that's, it's serious, you mm-hmm. know, it's affecting their lives. And I really love the way that you take all those patients seriously and kind of put yourself in their position, where I think I notice with doctors, they just do see certain things so much, they've lost empathy. And if a doctor can't treat it, doesn't exist. And especially if they don't know how to treat it, it can't be that they're a bad doctor. It's that they're a crazy patient, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it starts with believing the patient, one, and be willing to do the work to find out what's wrong. And again, what I love about you, it's like a broken record, is you don't stop until you find it. Mm-hmm.
I try.
She's so humble. It's like, it's crazy. I mean, so thank you. I think this is great. And we'll give a lot of people hope. And I mean, I see you do it day after day. And I know you've changed so many lives and you know that, but I think it's become such commonplace you forget. And because I hear it, you know, people call me and the senior praise. I'm like, yeah, she does it all the time. So
thank you for the honor of working with you.
It is such a pleasure to work with you, and just it brings back, you know, I get pessimistic about the whole the medical system and how it kind of breeds lack of empathy and caring, you know, and doctors I get down on, but they're kind of put in a no-win situation, and where you know, I can't treat these patients in 8 minutes, you know, but they're required to, so what else are they going to do? But again, you take it to another level. So I'm proud to say you're a friend and colleague, and love learning from you and bouncing things off each other. And I guess just a big thank you and appreciation.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
So I usually don't give a lot of compliments, so just kidding. But yeah, so this is great. And again, thanks for all that you do.
No, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.